greatest Laker of all time. Five-time champion. The only guard to play with one team for 20 years.
Moments that the words don't reach. There is suffering too terrible to name. You hold your child as tight as you can and push away the unimaginable. The moments when you're in so deep, it feels easier to just swim down. The Hamiltons move uptown and learn to live with the unimaginable.
What's up, homies?
Hey, homies.
Welcome back to the Corporate Homie Podcast.
I said a whoop whoop. It's kind of a somber whoop.
I said a whoop whoop. So the reason why we are being so somber is we wanted to do an episode about the recent and untimely death of Kobe Bryant and his daughter, Gianna.
The Black Mamba and the Mambacita.
And the Mambacita. As well as the other victims of the crash. And we wanted to, before we get into the episode, we wanted to make sure that we actually called the names of all of the victims. All nine people who were killed, because while we all love Kobe and we know Kobe and we're thinking about him, I want to make sure that we at least acknowledge that other people lost their lives in the crash as well. So for those of you who don't know, in addition to Kobe and Gianna, there was John Altobelli, his wife Carrie Altobelli, and their daughter Alyssa Altobelli. And then there was Christina Mouser, who was Kobe Bryant's assistant at the Mamba Sports Academy.
Coach.
And actually, actually help coach Gianna's team. And then there was the pilot, Aria Zobayan. And please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing their names, but he was the pilot. So I just wanted to say that before we get started, because so many people lost their lives.
Yeah, and let's just pause for a second just to remember them.
Okay, so we wanted to do an episode about lessons that we've learned from both Kobe Bryant's life and from his death. So this stems from, you know, just everyone talking about Kobe. We've been certainly in this very somber mood for the last couple of days, just really thinking about him and all the people that lost their lives, but also understanding what he put into the world and the impact that he left. And so we wanted to just have an episode about lessons.
Right. And, you know, I also wanted to say, you know, it's been interesting to watch everybody on social media's reaction to it and people's reaction in real life. But it just doesn't escape me that, you know, people lost a friend, a brother, a cousin, a teammate, a business partner,
a mom,
a coach. It's not some mythical person like these people. I mean, the family where the mother, the father, and the son, I mean, there's two siblings out there that lost half of their immediate family. And I just, gosh, it's just so
it's unimaginable.
No, it's not. Yeah. And it's, I can't even begin how you begin to process something like that. But I guess with that in mind, the first thing that I learned from Kobe in life was be the best. You know, he was the best at everything that he did on the court. And Jemele Hill was joking with him when she had a chance to interview him right before he retired that he was going to, like, be terrible at retirement because he loved basketball so much and couldn't imagine him finding anything else that gave him that much purpose. But, and I'm not suggesting that he did, but I mean, the man got a lot done in retirement in the short period of time that he was retired. I mean, he won an Oscar. He started an academy. I mean, it's all this Mamba Academy gear. He
renamed a venture capital firm.
They had $2 billion in assets. He had an entertainment company. He was on his way to being business Mamba and daddy Mamba. And like, I mean, he just.
Yeah. So he had transitioned from, elite athlete to corporate homie.
Yes. In like 30 seconds. So, right. Be the best at whatever your phase of life you're in, be the best at that. And he was being the best retiree.
Yeah. So that goes nicely into my first one. So it'll be the second point, which was, work hard and have the Mamba mentality. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people, and if you haven't read Kobe's book, we have a link to it on our website, but it's called Mamba Mentality, How I Played the Game. And Kobe started calling himself the Black Mamba as an alter ego after he had the 2003 sexual assault allegations. And Black Mamba, if you've ever seen Kill Bill, was a insane assassin in the movie, but of course a Mamba is a snake. And what he said was his name was being associated with all these terrible things that he had to find a way to separate himself, you know, from the negativity. So he created this alter ego, the Black Mamba. And then I'm just going to read an excerpt that he says in the book of what Mamba mentality is, because I do think there are a lot of people using the hashtag, talking about
incorrectly.
It, and they haven't even heard. Right. And they haven't even heard what Kobe says. And what he says is Mamba mentality is all about focusing on the process and trusting in the hard work when it matters most. It's the ultimate mantra for the competitive spirit. It started just as a hashtag that came to me one day, and it's grown into something athletes and even non-athletes embrace as their mindset. Hard work outweighs talent. Kobe continues, Mamba mentality is about 4 a.m. workouts, doing more than the next guy, and then trusting that the work that you've put in will be there when it's time to perform. So without studying or preparation or practice, you're leaving outcome to fate, and I don't do fate. It really made me think a lot of what you have said, Bimitra, a lot on our previous episodes, which is like preparation breeds confidence.
That's right.
And so to me, I think a lot of times people think the Mamba mentality is about
sure will,
you know, just being the best, but it's not about it. It's about you end up the best because you've worked harder than everyone else.
Right. And I just think that he showed that not only on the court, but also in retirement. And he would go talk to the best, talking about studying to be the best. When he was beginning the entertainment company, they said he sat down with Tyler Perry. He sat down with Oprah Winfrey. I know this is not popular to say now. He sat down with Harvey Weinstein. Like, how did you build this? What did you do? Like you said, studying, grinding, being the best. Then that's what we want to do as corporate homies every day within our world, right? And I know that when we
intense focus and a relentless approach to whatever it is that you're doing.
That's right. That is exactly right. So that, I love that. The next thing I got from him in life was, we always call it being a coachable spirit, but being open to change, you know, whether that was adjusting to the different teammates that he had to play with, or, you know, new coaches. But I think the most telling example is when Jemele Hill talks about him being tone deaf during the Trayvon Martin, and then them having a conversation and then continuing that dialogue. And then by the time the Michael Brown incident had rolled around, he was speaking at a rally and whatnot. So he was never someone who dug into a position, could not listen to your position. And there's so many homies and corporate people that they think that disagreements means I speak louder, I overtalk you, I keep saying my point until you see it my way. He wasn't doing that. Like, he was always open to change and to dialogue. And I feel like that's something that we can all learn and take in our own, you know, lives.
Have a coachable spirit. I love it. Yeah, and you're right. And without that, he can't learn to be great at things that he doesn't know a lot about. You have to believe that, that you have something that someone could teach you. My next point that I learned from Kobe's life was self-care is essential to greatness.
Yes. Yes.
So anyone who knows anything about Kobe knows that he was about eating the right food, having a custom shoe, doing Pilates. He would do all kind of things to take care of his body. That's actually how he started riding in the helicopter. Is he, you know, was basically saying that people think that it's about, you know, something sexy, but that he can't sit in the car for 2 hours, be cramped up, and then come on the court with a fresh mind and a fresh body and be ready to perform at an optimum place. And I think the same thing is for us. You know, maybe you can't take a helicopter to work, but maybe that's why you don't drive on the business trip and you fly. Maybe that's why you do incorporate, you know, 30 minutes a day where you're just by yourself and you have quiet time, or you do incorporate a workout in every day so that you too can be fresh, can be alert, can be peaceful and ready to go and shine and not, you know, on edge.
I love that, that, you know, essentially there are no shortcuts to it, right? Like, and a lot of times, you know, we've talked about this so many times on the podcast about, you know, having things that help you perform at your best that are tools or technology. It's not being a prima donna. It's not being bougie. You know, and like you said, for him, that was a combination of self-care. And also he understood that the one thing that wealth does not get you back is time. And he also didn't want to be sitting in traffic for 2 hours because he wanted to spend more time with his kids. And they talked about, you know, his wife would say, I can take the kids to school. Because apparently his daily routine was like, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, get a quick workout in at the house.
Fly to the gym.
Go to the gym, take the kids to helicopter. Take the kids to school, get on the helicopter, go to the Lakers track training facility, then get back on the helicopter and pick the kids up from school. And his wife would say, I can pick the kids up. And he said, no, I get so little time with them because I am on the road and I am playing games that if I can find an extra 20 minutes with them while I'm in town, I don't want to miss it. And so that self-care, that understanding that your time is important and you can't spend your time on knuckleheadness is all like wrapped into the same thing. My point was kind of blending into yours with the self-care and you can't get time back, which is ironic given, you know, what happened with, you know, the helicopter, because that was all about him trying to get back to spend more time, you know, with his family, you know, so.
So that's interesting, because I had that point too, that time is not promised, right? That's something I learned from his death, not so much from his life, but you pointed out the way he showed that in his life. And so, you know, I think we had a post even on Facebook that's like, you're not promised time, so go ahead, you know, call your parents, maximize your time, spend time with people that you love, you know, mend, you know, silly beefs. Although I do want to say this, you know, so I would say, right, love harder, forgive quicker. But when we say, you know, forgive silly beefs, we literally mean silly beefs. Just because time is finite, that doesn't mean that you should allow anybody who wants to be in your life or anyone that you're not speaking to, now is the time to call them and invite them back into your space, because you should never invite unhealthiness or
toxicity
into your life toxicity into your life. So if that person is toxic, I don't care if you know you dying tomorrow, that doesn't mean that they should be invited back in.
Especially if you dying tomorrow, they should not be invited back in.
That's right, right. So don't do that. Yeah, don't do that. My next point was miss some shots. So while Kobe was one of the greatest players to ever play the game, many people don't know this, he has missed more shots than anyone.
So everybody that knows me know that I fancy myself to be a basketball aficionado. And I can basically tell you anything that happened in basketball before 1997. And then I became an adult. And I still know some things. And I like to remind, not now, but when Kobe was alive, that he airballed free throws in the playoffs when he was a rookie. Right.
Right.
And I was like, because he wasn't supposed to be there. He was supposed to be in high school learning how to be a professional. So we had to suffer through him not being a professional, which I know people listen to podcasts like, what? But look it up. But the point is, he was out there. He was shooting his shots. Is your point?
And he was never.
And he didn't let it discourage.
To me, what you even right? And so to me, what you learn from that is, you know, you don't have to wait until you know that you're absolutely excellent something to incorporate it. First of all, if you have an idea, go ahead and try it so you can see. But many of us are paralyzed by trying to get promoted because we don't think we have all of the qualities or that we need, or we don't have all the skills yet. But one thing Kobe showed us was just don't be afraid of looking bad or looking embarrassed. Go ahead, try it now, incorporate it now.
Absolutely. Hello, somebody. My last thing that I learned from Kobe's life, from his life, not... from his life was that loyalty is rewarded. One of the reasons that Kobe is beloved is because he spent all 20 years with the Los Angeles Lakers.
With the same team.
With the Los Angeles Lakers. Shaq did not do that. LeBron is not doing that. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did not do that. Karl Malone did not do that. I mean, we could, the list, Charles Barkley, we could go on and on and on and on. He spent his entire professional career with one team. And I'm not beginning to suggest that the homies need to hook their wagon to one company. But when you've got something and you are excelling at it, just because you see everybody else moving around, and then he found a way to make sure he was getting properly rewarded within the Laker organization. And sometimes that meant other people had to move, like Shaq.
They had to go.
Like Shaq.
Right. Thanks so much. Right, we're moving on.
Right, but loyalty is rewarded.
I like that. Loyalty is rewarded, and that is true, and he was very loyal from a professional standpoint. My next point about a lesson I learned from him in life is in the book. The point is, explore creative ways to make games. So in the book, he talks about how he was having a repeated ankle injury. And then he had a really severe ankle injury. And so he took up one summer tap dancing because he found out that learning to tap and the way your feet moves and tap strengthens your ankles, but also, you know, not only would allow him to recover, you know, from the ankle injury, but then it helps you with foot speed and rhythm.
Right. So
the
byproduct.
I just think who is the guy? Yes. And so to be that creative with what are other ways that I can do to gain agility, to be more agile. And so I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this who just started a maternity leave. And she was saying that she was getting a little bored because the baby's so little and sleeps so much and everybody's at work. And I'm like, well, now is the time that you could, you know, take an online class or go ahead and learn that or go ahead and start reading up on what it's going to be.
Or learn a foreign language or whatever. Yeah.
Right. So I just think that there are times that you have where you can be creative to make gains. And it doesn't have to be a traditional way of reading a book or whatever. You can find new and creative ways to do things.
I think that's such a great point because, you know, so many people talked about Kobe Bryant's intellect. And I do think a lot of that came from the fact that he was raised in a non-traditional environment with his dad. Not only being an NBA player, but being an international basketball player. So they lived overseas. And I think that, you know, opens your mind up to see the world very differently and to approach it in a different way so that you can think about doing something like tap or because you're not afraid to do that because you didn't grow up with the same people on the same block for 15 years. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it gives you a different mindset and, you know, a growth mindset. To do other things, and that's probably what served him well in retirement with all the new ventures and things he was doing as well. So, you know, I think that's a fantastic point. My next point, I think, could go either way, whether you learned it from about him in life or you learned about him in death. I thought this about him before all of this, but because I am a women's basketball fan, but the whole girl dad, you know, which I know is trending on social media right now, but you know, the father-daughter sports relationship leads for closeness that allows you to be close with your parents or your dad in other areas, right? So when you get close to your dad in sports, then you have this thing in common, and then you're used to talking with them. And then it makes it easier to talk to them about boys or problems you're having at school or your fears or your girls or whatever that may be. It builds this intimacy and closeness with your parent. And I'll say this, and I know Demetri and I can say this as girls who played sports who were close to their dad through that, to this day, there are not many things that happen sports-wise that there is not a text that just the three of us are on. I mean, whether it's Tennessee basketball, mm-hmm. or Memphis State basketball, we still have this closeness that in many ways centers around sports that allows us to be close spiritually, professionally, mm-hmm. and otherwise.
I like that, and that's true. I hadn't thought of that, but just that closeness will allow you to have an intimate relationship. So when it's time to, as a little girl, when you want to talk about, well, I'm attracted to this boy, or I'm attracted to this girl, or I think I want to do this, or what if I wanted to do that, you have a foundational relationship that's already built. That's really cool. One of the things that I think is a big lesson that Kobe taught us that I didn't really understand until he died was, and certainly you and I live by this, is mentor somebody. So I had this idea that Kobe was a loner and really didn't fool with people. And maybe he was earlier in his career, but certainly as he's passed, all of these young, great athletes like LeBron James and them are talking about how he taught them about leadership, how to lead a team, how to, you know, deal with the spotlight, how to do. And I didn't really know. And I really respect the fact that he wasn't shouting himself out. And he wasn't, you know, really sharing that part. I mean, not like, look at me, but you can tell in depth how many people's lives, younger, you know, athletes that we admire that he touched and was teaching them, especially since he had been in the league basically right. his whole adult
right.
life.
Right. Yeah, that was very telling, the number of people that were saying, like, they would get text messages from him like, you okay? You know, I saw this, you balled out, or you had this injury, you're going to be all right, you know. And I do think that that's something he grew into. You know, because when he came in the league, he was a kid, you know, so he's 17 years old. So I definitely think he grew into that. So
my next point that I had was leadership is lonely. Kobe wasn't afraid to be.
I think he was the kind of guy that's like, why is there a mercy rule in Little League? Like, we're supposed to be trying to beat the snot out of people, right? And so, you know, I'm gonna have to be aloof, and I'm okay winning over here by myself.
You know, and that's probably true because, you know, everybody's been posting that quote about he was like, I don't understand. I don't understand lazy people. He's like, I don't want to understand lazy people. You know, he's like, I can't relate to lazy people. We don't speak the same language.
It's like me and broke people, we don't get along.
right. I don't need to know anything about that. And it, you know, and you're right. He also, in that same vein, wasn't afraid of having conflict. I think he thought that was a part of leadership, that you might have a vision that other people don't understand or can't see or won't see or whatever. My last point that I would say, that I learned in his death is it's all about how you finish.
Yeah.
So Kobe was very controversial. You know, like he said, he came out very young. He had, you know, some really terrible allegations against him, lawsuits that he settled. But now it's about people are like, he's an amazing family man. He's a touch. And, you know, and I'm literally like, I don't even know if we know these things are true. Right. You've seen him play basketball with his daughter. I don't know if that means he's really a great family man, but we sure do like it. Right. And we sure do. His image helped portray that. And
well, as I like to say, if you want to clean your image up, die. Right. Because then people are like, I mean, I heard literally somebody say the other day, I mean, he came from nothing. I'm like, he did not come from nothing.
I was
he
like,
grew
that's
up
not true.
Privileged.
His dad was a like, professional.
But if you want to clean your
right.
Yeah,
he speaks
if you
three languages.
Lived overseas
right, no.
And three, if you want to clean your image up, just die early, right? So, I mean, I'm kind of joking, but, you know, then you're just the same. And people get mad if they bring up any of your flaws instead of celebrating a complex human being. Right.
Yes, but I do think, okay, so let me ask you this. Do you feel like he just got the reputation as a family man and all that in death? Because I think he had sort of picked that up because his daughter's sitting with him courtside, because he's in the pit, you know what I mean, long before he died. Or do you feel like that's really been amplified?
I think it's been
death?
Amplified in his death. And I also think it's what you said. People, and not to say that it's not true, but we don't know if it is or isn't true, but people take snapshots of a picture of you on a sideline with a kid as some type of great fatherhood. I mean, it wasn't like, that's awesome, right? But we didn't know him. We don't know if he was reading books and, you know, this, that, and that. I mean, I don't know, right? But I was just like, you want to clean your image up? Die early. Right. But one of the things that I definitely learned in his death, and I think we always know this, but it just been very mindful of this. No one is discussing money. Everything that is being talked about is about his professional accomplishments as a basketball player, him beginning to cement his legacy as a businessman, as a brand ambassador, his commitment to his daughter by, you know, calling her Mamacita and saying how people would come up to them on the streets and say, you know, you need to have a son to cement your legacy. He was like, she got this. Like,
she would say, I got, and yeah, she would tell them, I got it. We don't need no boy. Right. We good.
So they're talking about all of those things. No, there's nobody that said, you know, and he was the highest paid NBA player at one time, or he signed an 8-year, $150 million contract. There's been no, he did those
things.
My point is, when you die, money is not going to be this. Not that we needed it. I think we do need a reminder sometimes, because some of us are so hard chasing a dollar, and we are missing family time and missing experiences and missing the vacation and missing the travel because we think we have time. And we don't do the big birthday celebration because we're like, I only want to celebrate milestone birthdays, right? Well, you might not get to 45, or if you're 45, you might not get to 50. So celebrate your 40. So celebrate your 43rd birthday. Celebrate your 37th birthday, because it's your birthday, right? Celebrate your promotion. Celebrate whatever. So that's what I took in it, is that no one is discussing money.
So in that thing I have now, you made me think of one more thing I did, because I actually joked about this, but it's true. And I don't know how many. Mm-mm. Do you have any more points? My last point is, 20 years is enough to do anything.
Yes.
20 years is enough to do anything. Like, he had a 20-year career, and then he went on, and they said that he had said in many interviews, until Gianna found her interest in basketball, he wasn't really watching
basketball.
They
showed a clip of him talking to Jemele Hill and Michael Smith when they were still doing their show on ESPN, and he'd been retired like 6 months, and they asked him, like, have you watched much basketball? He goes, look, I'm gonna tell y'all the truth. I was at home trying to get a quick workout, and I said I was gonna turn the game on, and I realized I don't have the NBA package. I don't have the NBA package. I had to add it. I didn't even have it.
Right, because he was like, I did that. I have had my career, and I think that's a lesson for many homies, including the two right here doing the podcast, is that sometimes inertia sets in, and you see other people, and they're having a 40-year banking career or 35-year ministry career or whatever, and you think you have to have that too. But you can just go ahead, have your 20, 25-year career.
Go do something else for 20, 20 years.
Shut that down and go do something. Shut that all the way down and go do something else. And so I hope that somebody gets blessed by that.
I'm getting blessed by that. Demetra's raising her hand. We are waving.
Hello, somebody. I feel that for myself.
We're receiving our own message.
Right. As I say, you're preach to yourself, what they say, preach, Pastor. But, you know, we wanted to jump on and do this episode. We had a couple of homies ask us if we were going to speak on it. And of course, we already had this episode in the works as soon as we heard about Kobe passing. Hope you found some of these Mamba lessons to be helpful. Hopefully, some of them will make you change the way you treat yourself, the way you treat the ones you love, including yourself.
And while you listen to the podcast, if there's something that you learned from Kobe that we didn't mention, drop us a line or shoot us a DM and let us know what was the Mamba lesson that you got that you're going to apply to your life moving forward for the homies. And as always, if you want to connect with us, you can reach us on all the social media platforms, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And we appreciate a 5-star review if you have a chance to drop one for us. And until next time,
hustle hard, homies.
There is suffering too terrible to name. You hold your child as tight as you can and push away the unimaginable. The moments when you're in so deep, it feels easier to just swim down. The Hamiltons move uptown and learn to live with the